Brothers, sisters, comrades and friends, welcome once again to Bat Country. Okay, now, it really sucks to reset that clock and undo weeks, months, even years of hard work in sobriety and have to start over. It's even worse when you have to go through withdrawal again, especially when you already know, as I do, just how fucking terrible it is. I'm of the opinion that acute alcohol withdrawal is one of the worst experiences a person can endure, outside of war and extreme traumatic events and natural disasters and that kind of thing. In other words, it's one of the worst things you can do to yourself and survive. In previous videos, I've talked both in general terms about the almost insurmountably horrific symptoms of acute alcohol withdrawal, and also about my own personal experiences with withdrawal, including and not limited to alcoholic hallucinosis and delirium tremens. I know better than most how bad it can get. And then somebody asked me a question in the comments of one of my most recent videos about the kindling effect. It's a question that should be obvious, but I felt like I needed to go away and do some introspection before I decided to tackle it on video. The question was something like this, to paraphrase. If I know just how traumatic and awful an extreme case of alcohol withdrawal is, how come I've done it so many times? Why would I keep doing it? If I know, if I talk openly, repeatedly, again and again about how fucking bad it is, how come I keep doing it to myself? That's the question we're going to talk about today. Why is someone like me, you know, outwardly relatively reasonable, relatively rational, I think, so constantly drawn to the self-obliteration, the self-annihilation of alcohol and alcohol withdrawal specifically? If I know how bad it is, why do it? Why? That's what I want to talk about today. Why is someone like me repeatedly drawn to self-annihilation, like a moth to the flames that would burn off its wings? Maybe you've asked yourself the same question or something similar. So let's maybe try to figure out an answer together. Why do people relapse in general? Before we get to a more personal answer, and I'll try to address it as honestly as I can, first we need to look at why people relapse in general. As with most of my videos and content on this subject, I'm really talking about extreme cases of alcohol abuse, the kind that doesn't really apply to the general population, nor even to the general population of people with an alcohol use disorder. Most people, inshallah, won't be affected by the kind of withdrawal I tend to talk about, and even hardened long-term drinkers might not ever experience delirium tremens to the extent that episodic drinkers like I do. In the previous video about kindling, the kindling effect, I talked about how people like me, binge drinkers, who have periods of sobriety punctuated by periods of extremely heavy alcohol use, withdrawal is often worse for us, progressively and worse, and it compounds over time. A lot of people won't experience that, which is a good thing. So when I'm talking about a relapse, I'm talking about a fast relapse from complete sobriety and recovery to oblivion. No half measures, nothing in between. Sobriety to oblivion, followed by the kind of withdrawal that brings you close to death again and again. As I mentioned, that doesn't apply to everybody. And if you're the kind of drinker that's currently worried about your intake of a bottle and a half of wine to help you wind down from a stressful day at work, the things that I'm going to talk about next might not be directly applicable to your situation. I'm also not a medical professional or a recovery expert of any kind. I don't consider myself to have any expertise at all. I occasionally get mistaken for an expert, I think largely because of my posh British accent. Beyond that, I have no qualifications to talk about this, except from my own experience. But you can consider this information your warning. This is potentially the road that you are currently looking down. So let's get stuck into the detail. Why do we relapse? Let's go. Let's start with three broad reasons. One, mental health. Mental health and addiction and substance abuse disorders, well, there's a lot of overlap. One doesn't cause the other. They both exist in harmony or disharmony with each other. They go hand in hand. The most common mental health disorders like anxiety or depression, which will affect one in two people within their lifetimes at some point, well, they can lead to feelings of shame, guilt, self-incrimination, a sense of loneliness, desperation, hopelessness, and a lack of connection with other people. Any single one of those symptoms can be enough to influence or trigger a relapse. All of those symptoms of mental illness, they tend to manifest in two primary types of alcohol use. For some of those who feel a lack of connection with other people as part of their mental illness, a sense of isolation, some of them can tend to throw themselves into highly socialist socialization, not socialism, that's a different thing. That's the alcohol to anarcho-socialist pipeline, perhaps. A lot of people fall into overactive social lives in order to feel that sense of connection with people, and they overcompensate. In an attempt to address that lack of connection, they seek out connection wherever they can find it. They become highly outgoing drinkers. Their behavior tends to become reckless and uninhibited. That's risky for people with substance use disorders. It's a slippery slope. Other people, and I tend to fall very much more into this category personally, respond to feelings of isolation by actively working to worsen it. Closing the curtains, locking the doors, shutting people out, not showing up for work, and cutting off modes of communication. If you've ever had that feeling when you've been actively drinking that you don't want to open your mail for fear of bad news, then you might fall into this category. Either one of those styles of dealing with your isolation, they're equally dangerous. Whether you become very outgoing and very highly sociable, you seek out social activities in order to drink and to feel part of a community, or whether, like me, you lock yourself away in a darkened room with bottles of hard liquor. Either way is dangerous, equally dangerous. And they add up to the same thing. It symbolizes a rejection and abandonment of personal responsibility. And that is very hard to recover from in recovery. And that becomes even harder if your mental illness is compounded by external elements like trauma, PTSD, maybe a brain injury, something like that. Quick coffee break. Oh, coffee. This episode is sponsored by coffee. Where do we get to? Two, relationships, intimacy, and work. Hell is other people, according to Jean-Paul Sartre. Negotiating relationships, both intimate and professional, is difficult. Sobriety or not, navigating complex relational networks is stressful. It brings stress and it brings self-analysis. And addicts are notoriously bad at both of those things. For example, your sex drive might change after you get sober. And that's a scary thought for a lot of people. Alcohol reduces your sense of inhibition. And if you're a person who has used alcohol to give you the false confidence you need to perhaps initiate sex, you'll miss it when it's gone. You will have to adapt your sexuality. The way you interface with your sexuality may have to change. And that may take dedicated, conscious work. And I'm not going to lie, it is different. There is an impact. There is a gear change. It is harder. It's harder to initiate sex, and it's harder to have the kind of youthful sex that you had in active addiction. And there's just no two ways around it. You have to think about it differently. And that changing relationship with sex, that itself can be enough to trigger a relapse. Sober dating, ask anybody. It sucks. I had dates that just descended into business meetings. We shook hands at the end of it. It's the same thing with work. Your working professional relationships will also have to change. And a lot of us will openly admit to drinking to combat the daily stress or even the monotony of our day jobs. It can become overwhelming with the stresses and pressures of work. Without new systems to address all the shit that comes with being an adult, work and sex and relationships, alcohol can still seem the easiest and most available way to deal with your woes. And it might have a short-term benefit, might dig you out of that hole very briefly, but it won't last long. However you cut it, other people are the most common cause for relapse in one way or another. A new partner you're trying to impress, or a current partner who's making you feel isolated in some way, a boss putting the pressure on, meeting an old friend, an old drinking partner who doesn't know or doesn't respect the fact that you've got sober. The social discomfort of meeting new people, or a social event at which everybody seems to be having more fun than you. All of these are triggers for relapse. A good encounter, drink about it. A bad encounter, we drink about it. And number one on this very broad list of common causes of relapse is the withdrawal period itself. The big trigger of relapse is the withdrawal process. It is brutally ironic that alcohol is both the cause of and potentially the cure for the worst symptoms of withdrawal. That makes alcohol extremely difficult to walk away from when you're experiencing those terrible, self-obliterating symptoms of withdrawal. It just seems like the easiest solution is just to open another bottle, have another swig, and put off the withdrawal for one more day. God knows I've been there. When you've been drinking hard enough and long enough to trigger an acute alcohol withdrawal period, the urge to drink more to stifle the horrible symptoms of withdrawal instead of seeking professional help can be overwhelming. Stopping cold turkey alone is hard. And while you're going through it, your dumb, panicking brain will try to convince you that just one more day is all you need. You'll stop tomorrow when you're feeling better. But you won't feel better tomorrow. Soon, that one day, that one extra day of drinking spirals into a week, and then 2 weeks, and then you've lost a month, and then maybe a year. And the only thing you've done in that time is make your life worse. Drinking more might help the immediate symptoms, but not the underlying cause. I tend to think of it a little bit like if you're driving and you notice your engine maintenance light blink on and flash to give you a warning that your engine is in trouble, and you choose to treat that by taking the bulb out of the dashboard. You've done nothing to address the real problem. And that is a little bit like drinking to treat the symptoms of withdrawal. You're just hiding the problem, just pushing it down the road a little bit further. So what about me? What is my personal reason for relapsing time and time again? By the way, if you're finding any of this useful, do like and subscribe it. Just I want to see how many people are finding this stuff valuable. Relapses don't happen in isolation. They're not one-off events, and even medical professionals tend to treat your withdrawal as part of a larger illness, with the expectation that there will be more down the road. They don't happen in isolation, and there are usually triggers. Whether the trigger is the withdrawal itself that keeps you drinking, as I just discussed, or it's directly linked to a mental health dip, or some external trauma, or experiencing uncomfortable emotions, or whether it's a place, or a person, or a thing, this issue is insipid and insidious, and alcohol will find a way to justify creeping back into your life. So what about me personally? Why have I willingly boarded the withdrawal process multiple times despite knowing, despite being an authority on how fucking awful it is? Why have I done it repeatedly? Short answer? I don't know. I've been sober with relapses for 4 years now. I've invested money in various forms of therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy as well, trying to specifically to identify my own triggers that cause my own relapses. And I've done that with limited success. That shit's expensive too. It's not available to everybody. And no medical insurance in the Western world is going to be willing to cover that. And I still haven't identified why that happened. I've got some clues. I think it's worth noting at this point that I have a head injury, some very minor damage to my frontal lobe. And as a result of that, alongside any number of pretty serious concussions that I've picked up over my lifetime from various mountain biking accidents and martial arts, which I did for a long time, all of those may have contributed to my own poor impulse control and emotional regulation. That's all governed by the frontal lobe, and that's the part of my brain that I damaged. And that injury happened about 6 or 7 years ago. But looking back over my entire drinking career, I think I was always a candidate for this. From the very first drink, from before that, I think it was in me all along, just waiting for an excuse to reveal itself and take over my life. And that's partially what makes me susceptible to relapse. Genetics, behavior, nature, nurture, and also potentially compounded by a head injury. But that's not it. That's not the whole story. Occasionally, I'm asked, or was asked in the early stages of my recovery, whether I drank to feel normal. Perhaps you've heard that question yourself. Do you drink to make yourself feel normal? For me, no, not me. That's the opposite of what I want. I don't want to feel normal. Feeling normal is the problem. Alcohol is the cure. I don't want to feel normal. That's the problem. But that is also very stupid. Part of my own sobriety and my own recovery is acknowledging that that opinion, that I don't want to feel normal, that that is an unthinking and cowardly way to live. And that's not how I want to live my life. I want to take responsibility. Also, I'm a chaotic person. I've always had a self-destructive personality, and I'm attracted to self-destructive people, people with a self-destructive streak, at least. All of my heroes are fringe folk who have generally had substance abuse issues of their own. And I like troubled artists, drunken writers. Those are my people. I thrive in chaos and uncertainty, for better or worse, definitely for worse. And that ability has led to some of the most interesting and hilarious moments of my life. Now, with 4 or 5 years of sobriety with relapses, I miss the fact that I'm not generating the kind of crazy stories I did when I was a little younger and actively drinking. I'm not as reckless. My life isn't as dangerous as it used to be. And that makes me feel like a less interesting person. That has been a hurdle in my recovery. I want interesting shit to talk about. I want crazy and weird things to be happening. But I recognize that that feeling too is just an impulse to relapse. It is my brain trying to convince me to relapse. It is an excuse, and it is an example of how insidious and cunning this issue is. Boredom, feeling unfulfilled in sobriety, that can cause people like me to relapse as well. And then there's something else, another reason which doesn't really turn up very much in the literature about sobriety and about relapse. It doesn't fall into any of the commonly cited causes for relapse, and it's not in the three broad topics that I mentioned a moment ago. And that's this. It's the fear of success. I've found that a number of my own relapses haven't come at the lowest point in my life, but instead they've come at times when I'm about to achieve something, when I'm about to do something important. For example, a couple of my relapses have happened immediately after I have signed a new contract with a business client. I sign the contract, then suddenly I'm aware that I have to do the work and I have to do it well, and people are expecting good things. That fear of doing the work well is enough to trigger a relapse for me. That fear of succeeding. It's almost like the relapse is deliberately sabotaging myself to prevent myself from taking risks, to prevent myself from being successful. It's almost as if part of my self-hating subconscious doesn't want me to thrive. And it actively works against me to make sure that I don't achieve what I've promised to achieve. Very, very insidious. And as a result, I have to be more on guard when things are going well. When things are going shit, I'm fine. I go to the gym and I work out and I de-stress, but when things are good, when things are looking promising for me, that's when I'm at risk. Isn't that weird? Whatever the reason, I have now had several very terrible relapses and more. I've barely survived a number of very dangerous, near fatal withdrawals, only to repeat the experience again several months later. I come here, make a little video about how terrible withdrawal is, and I go about my life for a year, and then it happens again. I let my guard down, a chink in the armor is exposed, and in it comes. The reason is that sometimes there is no identifiable reason, and the only way through it is to try to live in a way that addresses every possible reason, and that is easier said than done. Keep coming back. See you next time.